The story of Joseph and his brothers is one of the best known stories in the book of Genesis. It has been the subject of countless TV specials and movies, from live action series to animated movies to VeggieTales episodes. One of my favorite retellings of the Joseph story, and I'm guessing Kim's too, is Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I first saw this musical live in a small theater in Minneapolis my first year of college. This was several years before Donny Osmond famously portrayed the role of Joseph on stage more than 2,000 times. And this particular production did not draw a huge audience. But the music is catchy and the story is memorable, and it remains one of my favorite musicals today. In fact, I listened to the soundtrack while I was writing this sermon. But I have a problem with the various depictions of Joseph in film and on stage. The stories almost always portray Joseph as a hero, a good guy, a misunderstood younger child, the victim of older brothers. The passage that Mabel read for us this morning, when read by itself, seems to confirm this idea. When the brothers, who had sold Joseph into slavery many years before, appeared in Egypt begging for food, Joseph met them with weeping, not anger or vengeance. He didn't punish them for selling him into slavery or ask them to explain their actions or apologize in order to rebuild their relationship. Instead, he hugged them, he cried, and he declared his journey into Egypt was God's work in order to save his family and the people of Egypt. He sent his brothers back to Canaan to bring their father and the entire family to live in Egypt, where Joseph would make sure everyone had enough to eat during the ongoing famine. Such a kind, generous, forgiving brother, right? Not exactly, or at least that's not the whole picture. The story of Joseph spans 14 chapters in the book of Genesis, about 25% of the whole book. And some of the story does not paint a very flattering picture of Joseph. He was the second youngest of 12 sons of Jacob, who was the son of Isaac, who was the son of Abraham. Jacob had two wives and two maidservants, who were the mothers of his 12 children. Joseph's mother, Rachel, was Jacob's most beloved wife, his true love. From the very beginning, Jacob favored Joseph over all of his other sons because he was Rachel's firstborn child and because he was born when Jacob was an old man after Rachel struggled with infertility for many years. But in reality, the young Joseph was sort of obnoxious. He was a tattletale. He would go to his father to report his brother's bad behavior. He loved to brag about himself, sharing dreams that elevated him above his brothers. And to make things worse, Jacob made his preference for Joseph clear by giving him a spectacular multicolored coat that was far nicer than anything the other brothers had. Joseph strutted around in this coat. In the musical, he said, "I look handsome, I look smart, I am a walking work of art." While the brothers fumed silently, until one day they snapped. While out in the fields far from home, they grabbed him, intending to kill him. But at the last minute, they decided to spare his life and instead sold him to some passing traders who took him to Egypt as a slave. Over the next years, Joseph proved himself reliable as a leader of his fellow slaves, until he was thrown in prison after refusing the sexual advances of the wife of a high-ranking Egyptian official. What saved Joseph was his ability to interpret dreams. When Pharaoh began having puzzling dreams, he called on Joseph to interpret for him. Joseph explained that the dreams predicted an upcoming famine and recommended that the leaders store up 20% of the harvest to prepare for the lean years ahead. Pharaoh rewarded him by naming him second in command and placing him in charge of the storage plan. And the plan worked. When famine hit, the people of Egypt still had plenty of food. The climax of Joseph's story started during the famine. At this point, Joseph was literally one of the most powerful men in Egypt, besides Pharaoh. He controlled the entire food supply and decided who got something to eat and who did not. Joseph's father and brothers were still living in Canaan, where the famine was devastating. So Jacob sent his 11 sons to buy some of the grain stored up in Egypt because the family was starving. This was so many years later, and Joseph had grown so much that you might think this was the opportunity for a beautiful reunion. But instead, Joseph, who recognized the brothers, even though they did not recognize him, used his power to manipulate his brothers. He pretended not to know them, he threw them in jail, and eventually he hid a silver cup in his youngest brother Benjamin's sack of grain, then accused him of stealing it. It was not until his brother Judah, the same one who had convinced the other brothers to sell Joseph instead of killing him so many years ago, pleaded that Joseph spared Benjamin, that Joseph revealed his identity to his brothers and showed them mercy in the passage we read today. Just as a side note, this same Judah would become the ancestor to Jesus the Messiah. So Joseph may not have been quite the kind-hearted, generous, forgiving brother we've believed. But that actually makes this story of reconciliation even more compelling. Earlier in the story, Joseph was the powerful one who was wronged by his brothers. And in this part of the story, he had all the power over them. He could have punished them, but instead he began the process of rebuilding relationships and restoring his family to wholeness. He embraced his brothers and wept, especially when he hugged Benjamin. The book of Genesis doesn't say it specifically, but it's not hard to imagine he had a soft spot for Benjamin, the youngest in the family and his only full brother. He told the brothers that God was the one responsible for his being sent into Egypt as a slave, so that he might be there to do good. And he extended God's grace to the entire family by insisting that they all relocate to Egypt, which they did, all 66 of them. Jacob got to see his beloved son Joseph, whom he had believed dead, before the end of his life. And Jacob's sons became the fathers of the 12 tribes of Israel, the historical and spiritual foundation of the nation of Israel. And somewhere between 60 and 300 years later, depending on which source you read, a baby named Moses was born to the descendants of Joseph's brother Levi. True reconciliation can be an incredibly long, challenging process of healing and rebuilding relationships. It requires self-examination and forgiveness, usually on both sides. But the rebuilding of relationships can be worth the effort. For 4 years in the early 2000s, National Public Radio had a regular series called This I Believe, which encouraged listeners to examine their core beliefs. One of the most powerful stories I heard during this series was called Finding Freedom in Forgiveness. It was co-narrated by a woman named Jennifer Thompson Canino and the man she mistakenly believed had raped her, Ronald Cotton. Jennifer identified Ronald as her attacker, and he spent 11 years in prison for the crime before DNA evidence proved he was innocent. I'd like to share a few excerpts of their longer dialogue because it's a powerful story of reconciliation. Jennifer, I believe in forgiveness, the kind that has the power to release a person from a place of anger and hate to a place of peace. Ronald, I also believe in the healing power of forgiveness. I had gone to prison an angry man and gotten real comfortable with it. But that kind of emotion was keeping me a prisoner in my own private jail. I had to let the hate go and learn to live and forgive. Jennifer, discovering the truth filled me with overwhelming guilt and shame for mistakenly putting an innocent man in prison. I found it almost impossible to forgive myself. I asked Ron if he could ever forgive me. And with all the mercy in the world, he took my hands, and with tears in his eyes, he told me he had forgiven me a long time ago. At that moment, I began to heal. Ronald taught me how to let go of all that pain. His forgiveness set me free that night. Ronald, Jennifer and I are friends. And some people don't really understand it. But we were the victims of the same injustice by the same man, and this gave us a common ground to stand on. Together, we were able to help each other heal through a shared experience. Reconciliation does not magically undo the past. It does not make injustice disappear or heal the wounds that people carry. But it can create something new in the midst of what has been broken. Jennifer and Ronald could not change what had happened to them. They could not get those 11 years back. But they discovered that their story did not have to end with anger, guilt, and brokenness. God can work for good in surprising ways, even in circumstances that seem impossibly difficult, and with people who are far from perfect. And that's the other powerful message of the story of Joseph's reconciliation with his brothers. God was at work in the messy, complicated, sometimes terrible life of Joseph and his family, using deeply flawed people to ensure that the world was taken care of. In the midst of difficult circumstances, God is still at work. Does this mean it's easy to see God when life is difficult? No. Does it mean things will always turn out the way we hope? Also, no. But even in the most challenging times we face, we are never alone. And God uses our messy, imperfect lives to accomplish more than we ever could imagine. German theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer once said, quote, "God is not ashamed of the lowliness of human beings. God marches right in. He chooses people as his instruments and performs his wonders where one would least expect them." End quote. So today, I encourage you to reflect on what may be some hard questions. Where in your life do you need to work toward reconciliation? Are there people in your life who need your forgiveness? Are there people you need to forgive in order to let go of past hurts that are separating you from God and from other people? Reconciliation is a countercultural act, especially in today's me-first culture. It's not easy. It takes time, and it requires us to let go of our pride and our pain and invite others back into our lives. But as Joseph and his brothers discovered, it can be worth the journey and the pain to reconnect with those who matter in your life, God willing. And wherever you are in the journey of reconciliation, remember that you are not alone, for God is with you as you travel this journey. Thanks be to God for God's presence in our messy, difficult, amazing, rewarding lives. Amen.